Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Emilio San Pedro, and in the early hours of Saturday, the 9th of November, these are our main stories. The former Brazilian president, Lula da Silva, has been released from jail to a rapturous welcome from his supporters. Firefighters in eastern Australia say they're facing an unprecedented situation as dozens of bushfires rage across the state of New South Wales. Also in this podcast...
Let it go, let it go. The cold never bothered me anyway.
Frozen 2 has its premiere in Hollywood, but can it live up to the phenomenal success of its predecessor? Also, we find out why hashtag KFC proposal has been trending worldwide. But we begin this podcast outside a prison in Brazil. The sound of supporters of former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva cheering as he was walked out of jail. He spent a year and a half in prison on corruption charges, but was released hours after the country's Supreme Court ruled that convicts could stay out of prison until they had exhausted all of their appeals. So he's free, but he's not exonerated. It's quite a reception then for a man in prison for corruption. So is it a sign of how popular he remains? A question for our South America correspondent, Katie Watson, who's in Brazil.
Absolutely. I mean, he came out of prison to chant, you know, free Lula. Once again, his supporters saying there was no evidence, no crime. And this is in connection to his charges of corruption and money laundering over the purchase of a beachside apartment that he says was politically motivated. He was framed by his political enemies. And Lula is a man who certainly divides here in Brazil. Of course, he was seen as a president who helped millions out of poverty. He still has a massive following, but he has plenty of detractors, people who feel that he was as corrupt as any other politician, despite promises of being better. And in fact, the kind of hatred towards Lula and the Workers' Party is exactly what propelled far-right Jair Bolsonaro to the top. Of course, he is now president.
And President Bolsonaro is a key rival of his, as you say. Has there been any response from Mr. Bolsonaro or his administration?
He's so far remained pretty quiet, but his sons have commented on this. I mean, this is what's going to be interesting, is that the release of Lula is going to strengthen the left. Now they have the leader, if you like, back in and has a voice. Now, he won't be able to run for political office because of his criminal record, but he'll still be, you know, vocal. But it could also strengthen the right, because it's a reminder of exactly why people voted for Bolsonaro, and that kind of polarisation, I'm sure, is set to continue here in Brazil.
So he's one of those polarising figures, but is he expected to get right into it, given that way that he tweeted, you know, about his being freed, and he tweeted himself in the gym doing all these sorts of activities? It seems like he's sending out a message that he plans to be very active.
Absolutely. I mean, he didn't really stop. He has been active on social media, whether that's obviously somebody managing his account. He has done plenty of interviews in prison. You know, that he's not stopped being a politician, even if he's not actually got an official role. And certainly he is the figurehead of the Workers' Party and the figurehead for millions of people in Brazil. But no doubt, coming out of prison, that voice will only be stronger.
Katie Watson. In Australia, firefighters are battling a record number of major bushfires across New South Wales. There are reports of people trapped in their homes, with crews unable to reach them because of the blazes. Strong winds and extreme temperatures have exacerbated the fires, many of which are in drought-affected areas. Our correspondent in Sydney, Phil Mercer, sent this report.
Every year, Australia battles serious bushfires, but this time it's different. A record number of emergency warnings are in place, as more than a dozen potentially catastrophic blazes threaten communities in New South Wales. Authorities in the nation's most populous state have received reports that residents were trapped in their homes because fire crews couldn't reach them due to the intensity of the flames. Vast areas of land have been scorched. The New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons says they're doing all they can in dangerous conditions.
Unfortunately, we are in uncharted territory this afternoon. We've never seen this many fires concurrently at emergency warning alert level. We've got more than 1,000 firefighters working on the fires, more than 70 aircraft working on the fires, and dozens of heavy plant and machinery trying to do the best they can to save and protect as many people as possible.
The fires around the coastal town of Port Macquarie, 250 miles north of Sydney, have turned the sky an eerie orange. Hot and windy weather combined with a long drought have made parts of eastern Australia a tinderbox. Emergency warnings have also been declared in Queensland. In Western Australia, residents have been told that significant bushfires were likely at the weekend.
Phil Mercer, she's one of the biggest names in women's sport. Megan Rapinoe captained the U.S. women's soccer team to victory at this summer's World Cup, picking up awards for best player and top goal scorer along the way. She was then celebrated by FIFA, awarded their trophy for best player alongside Lionel Messi. The BBC's Eleanor Roper sat down with Megan in San Francisco to chat to the athlete and activist all about racism in football, equal pay, and sexuality in sport. Eleanor started by asking her how she felt about all the accolades.
It's quite surreal, to be honest. It's a little strange. I think going through, you know, most of my career and then kind of at the end of it becoming this player, you know, performing the way that I did in the World Cup, it's a little strange.
Rapinoe for two! And Rapinoe to give the USA a foot in the semi-final against England!
Obviously, it's well documented that you're involved in this equal pay dispute with US soccer. Mm-hmm. Now, you're quoted as saying that you now know your worth. I wonder, at what point do you feel you came to realise your own worth?
I mean, honestly, we still probably undervalue ourselves. I would say whatever you think you're worth, you're definitely worth more than that. Don't settle for anything less. Go for equal, go for more. Don't accept any of these sort of antiquated and frankly, you know, BS answers. There's been such a lack of investment for such a long period of time. So any direct comparison to the men's sports or the men's leagues is just like wholly unfair. So until we have equal investment and over-investment, really, because we've been so underserved for so long, we're not going to have any sort of meaningful conversation about compensation and revenues and TV viewership.
The best FIFA women's player of the year is Megan Rapinoe. Congratulations.
Some of the stories that have inspired me most, you know, Raheem Sterling and Koulibaly, they're incredible performances on the field, but the way that they've taken on the disgusting racism that they have to face this year, but probably for their whole lives.
Raheem Sterling, a huge figure for us in the UK, but you saying it's not just down to Raheem to speak out about that, it's on everyone.
You know, if ever there's like an instance of racism, if every single player on the field is not outraged, then to me they're part of the problem and they're not doing enough.
It's very topical for us at the moment. So England recently played Bulgaria in the Euro 2020 qualifiers. That game was stopped twice because of racist abuse. Now, Bulgaria have been told that they have to play two games behind closed doors, one of which is suspended and fined £65,000. I wonder, do you think that sanctions are tough enough at the moment?
For me, I'm just like, make it super extreme to that, to what's so damaging to the team, it's so damaging to the federation, it's so damaging financially, and for the fans who want to go watch the game. So then it's affecting everyone. $65,000 is an absolute joke.
Now, in the UK, there are no openly gay male professional footballers. I wonder, what would your message be to any players who feel that they're not able to be open about their sexuality?
First and foremost, we see you and we're with you, and you know, eventually, hopefully it'll be, you know, the environment will be different where you feel like you can come out.
Megan Rapinoe speaking there to Eleanor Roper. Now to a subject you'll be very familiar with if you've had or even just known of a youngish child in the last 6 years. Frozen, the 2013 film, was a phenomenon, one of the most successful animations of all time, and a box office record breaker. Now, Anna, Elsa, and Olaf, the snowman, are back in a sequel. But can it possibly live up to the success of its predecessor? Well, it's had its premiere in Hollywood, and our correspondent Sophie Long sent this report from the red carpet.
It was the story of sisterly love that became an eye-watering commercial success and a cultural phenomenon that had young and old singing.
Let it go, let it go, can't hold it back anymore.
But that was 6 years ago, right? Well,
just when you thought Frozen Fever might finally be subsiding, it's back, and so are the fans. This is Hollywood Boulevard, and these people are Frozen fanatics.
Let it go, let it go, can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go, turn away and slam the door.
Hours before superfans got to see the sequel, excitement was in plentiful supply.
I have, like, butterflies in my belly because I'm, like, so excited to meet Anna and Elsa.
How do you feel about seeing Frozen 2?
I'm so excited to go.
Why?
Because the new characters and the new costumes, I bet they're going to look so exciting.
It looks like it's going to be just up there with Frozen with me. It looks amazing.
Go north, across the enchanted lands, and into the unknown.
Excitement has been building since long before the trailer was released. Some critics claim Frozen is the best Disney animated film of the modern era.
What many people loved most about Frozen was just how progressive it was. Not just two strong female leads, but a modern man unafraid of powerful women. In doing so, Disney did what Disney does best. It dared us to dream.
Let it go, let it go.
Frozen 2, therefore, has much to live up to. Will it deliver? Frozen's young fans will decide.
The cold never bothered me anyway.
Sophie Long from the red carpet at the premiere of Frozen 2. Still to come on the podcast.
For us, it is as a dream. We are really excited and emotional. Our soul will be very happy.
A new border crossing point is opening between Pakistan and India, a rare instance of cooperation between the two countries. But first, in October, 39 Vietnamese nationals were found dead in a refrigerated truck in Essex in the southeast of England. Now, British police have released more details about the victims, including all of their names. Among them were 10 teenagers, including two 15-year-old boys. Our reporter from the BBC's Vietnamese service, Na Pham, told me more.
The list of victims have been announced by both Vietnamese and Essex police. So now we know the full names and the origins of all 39 victims. We found out that there are two very young victims. They're only 15 years old and they are now confirmed dead. Also, we have a number of women also amongst the 39. Looking through the list and see all the names, such a tragic event.
And so many young people in particular on that list as well. It's an extremely dangerous way to come to the UK. Does this incident tell us anything about the economic situation, political atmosphere in Vietnam, and why people would risk everything to come all this way?
You're right when you notice that there are a large number of young people amongst the list. So, you know, when you're young, I mean, you're 18 and 19, you probably don't think about death. So you probably think about dangers, risk, etc. But you never think that you actually die. But they fled Vietnam because they wanted a better future. They want to escape from the poverty that their parents actually have been experiencing. They also want to look for more opportunities. And you would say, why would they go to the UK? The UK actually has been sheltering a large number of Vietnamese refugees since the 1980s. And also the Vietnamese do have a network of relatives and families here in the UK. Now, the economic situation in Vietnam has been improving. However, the people who come from Vietnam actually are originated from a certain area in central Vietnam where development probably is not as fast as in other areas. So that is one of the reasons.
What's the reaction been in Vietnam to all of this?
The whole nation has been shocked. We learned about it and everyone was mourning about that. I mean, today I've got so many messages from my families and friends back in Vietnam saying, what a disaster. How could it happen? So that's also created a certain pressure on the Vietnamese government. So they really wanted to investigate it so quickly.
Na Pham. Next to Georgia, where hundreds of far-right protesters have clashed with police in the capital Tbilisi as they tried to prevent screenings of an Oscar-nominated film about gay love. The Swedish-Georgian film, And Then We Danced, has angered ultranationalist groups and the Georgian Orthodox Church. Rehan Dimitri reports from Tbilisi.
Outside Tbilisi's Amirani cinema, several hundred far-right nationalists attempted to break through a police cordon and force themselves into the building to disrupt the screening of a film about two male dancers who fall in love. The protesters shouted abuse and threatened those who had bought tickets. And Then They Danced is an award-winning film by Swedish director of Georgian origin Levan Aiken. This is the first Georgian film to show on the big screen sexually explicit scenes between gay men.
Rehan Dimitri. From today, a new border crossing point will be open between Pakistan and India. It's a corridor leading to one of the holiest sites in the Sikh religion, a gurdwara or temple in the Pakistani town of Kartarpur. The Sikh pilgrims from India won't need a visa to get to the holy site on Pakistani territory. It's a rare instance of cooperation between the two countries as tensions over the disputed region of Kashmir remain high. Pratik Shah Gilyal sent us this report from the Indian side of the border in Punjab.
I'm at a Sikh temple, a gurdwara, in a little town near India's border with Pakistan. Devotees have gathered here for worship. They're all facing the Guru Granth Sahib, the holy book of Sikh scriptures, which is kept on a raised platform in front of them and is covered in a bright yellow and pink cloth. Now, these prayers happen here every day, but there seems to be a special energy, a special enthusiasm in the run-up to the 550th birth anniversary of Guru Nanak, the founder of the Sikh religion. And just ahead of Guru Nanak's birth anniversary, both India and Pakistan seem to have come together in a rare display of friendship. They have struck a deal to open a new border entry point between them in the Punjab region, to facilitate Indian pilgrims to travel easily to one of Sikhism's holiest shrines inside Pakistan. The mood here could not be more buoyant. I meet the Bedi family, who are preparing to travel to the shrine as soon as their application is approved. Kamaljeet, who is in her 50s, says she has waited for this moment all her life.
Very happy. We are getting a chance to go there, to our forefathers' land, native land. For us, it is as a dream. We are very excited and emotional. We were doubtful. Can we have a chance? But with the Almighty's blessings, we are sure that we will go there and our soul will be very happy.
Just a few kilometers away from the Bedi family's house, these women are queuing to peek into a fixed pair of binoculars at a viewing point just short of the border with Pakistan. On a clear day, pilgrims can see the white painted structure and the dome of the holy shrine, Gurdwara Darbar Sahib Kartarpur, which they hope to visit one day.
Pratiksha Gilyal reporting. In Rome, some 30 refugees and asylum seekers in Italy have just assumed a strikingly different role, taking the stage in the city's opera house in a production of Mozart's Idomeneo. It tells the story of a Cretan king washed ashore in his native island after a storm on his way back from the Trojan War. Freelance reporter and writer based in Rome, Giada Zampano, told James Menendez how the idea came about.
Actually, this is an initiative which was organized by the Canadian director, Robert Carson, together with the community of Sant'Egidio, which is a Catholic organization based in Rome, which has helped thousands of refugees in the past few years, getting them to Europe through humanitarian corridors. And the organizer explained that this wants to be a metaphor of the current war, of the current tragedy of thousands of migrants and refugees who try to reach European shores and Italian shores in many cases through this very dangerous and often deadly journey through the Mediterranean. So they believe that this is a sort of like universal story that they wanted to bring on stage.
And what are they, are they going to be doing, Jada?
Actually, they will be on stage telling the story of Idomeneo, who's this king of Crete who survived drowning and arrived at the shores of Crete. And the migrants will play both parts. They will be, some refugees and some of the prisoners, and they also embody the other parts of the soldiers who are on the other side. And so it will be a tale of war and survivors, and at the same time also a tale of hope and peace and forgiveness.
And as I understand it, the Mediterranean, the sea, takes a central part as well. Is that right?
Yes, actually, there will be some images of, the stormy sea that will be on stage, that will be filmed basically on stage. So to make, the sea itself one of the main characters of the story.
Jada Sampano. And to end this podcast, a good news story from South Africa, which has gone viral across the world. All I'm going to say is hashtag KFC proposal. Morgan Eyre has the finger-licking details.
A beautiful beach at sunset or a romantic walk in a park are maybe some of the settings that come to mind when you think about a perfect proposal. But what about KFC? Well, one man in South Africa did just that. Surrounded by plastic red chairs and a portion of fries, he got down on one knee and popped the question to his now fiancée, which she gladly accepted, smiling and laughing as other customers cheered and took pictures. The moment was caught on camera and has gone viral across social media, with millions of views and the hashtag KFC proposal. It has also led to an appeal by KFC South Africa to find the happy couple who have now been identified, and since then, well, it's become a fast food fairy tale, with individuals and companies offering to provide makeup, transport, and even their honeymoon.
Morgan Eyre. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. And if you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Emilio San Pedro. Until next time, goodbye.